case this morning, United States v. Woods. Mr. Homa.
May it please the Court, after this Court's opinion in Smith, crimes with the mens rea of recklessness can no longer be crimes of violence and are not predicate offenses for the career offender guideline. Involuntary manslaughter in our case has a mens rea of recklessness and therefore is not a qualifying offense.
Can Smith be clarified or reconciled, I should say, with the guidelines commentary that specifically mentions manslaughter as being included as a countable crime and does not distinguish between voluntary and involuntary manslaughter?
Yes, sir, and I believe Smith is clear when it points to recklessness and involuntary manslaughter. Having that specific mens rea brings involuntary manslaughter under the case law that this Court has decided.
The commentary doesn't distinguish, though. The commentary just refers to manslaughter generally as being includable.
Yes, Judge, but there is a distinction between involuntary manslaughter and manslaughter. In our instance, we have involuntary manslaughter, which makes it convenient for the Court because it has the mens rea of recklessness. So it should be included under the scope of Smith. Because Mr. Woods was sentenced as a career offender, including this involuntary manslaughter conviction, his case should be remanded for resentencing.
So the other question that arises about this case is related to one I asked a couple arguments ago. There is the categorical approach, but even under that, if there are admissions from a defendant, the Court has felt empowered to look at those admissions. And the government argues that here Mr. Woods admitted that there was shaken baby syndrome. I'd like your comment on that.
Yes, Your Honor. The term shaken baby syndrome first came up in the pre-sentence investigation report. The plea colloquy from the state court proceeding that Mr. Woods assented to did not use that language.
So is your position Mr. Woods did not, in fact, admit to that behavior?
Mr. Woods
causing that problem, I guess, to shaking?
Mr. Woods certainly did not assent to concede that behavior. That's the cause of death. The cause of death stated in the plea colloquy that would have come from the medical examiner was that the baby died of hydrocephalophilia due to a subdermal hematoma due to a blunt head trauma. Now, that's the technical term for water on the brain, which was also included in the plea colloquy. The pre-sentence investigation report described that as shaken baby syndrome. None of that indicates the actions that Mr. Woods may have engaged in that would have caused the baby to suffer from those.
How was the plea colloquy taken? Apparently it was testimony from a medical examiner?
No, Your Honor. The original case went to trial and was reversed on appeal. And this is all in the plea colloquy. After it came back, Mr. Woods was given an offer of time served, and the prosecutor read in what it would prove if the case had proceeded to trial. Mr. Woods was pleading guilty, and the prosecutor was reading some of the evidence that it had. And if you look at what the prosecutor stated, it never mentioned any action that Mr. Woods engaged in. It mentioned that the baby was in Mr. Woods' custody, that the baby suffered this head trauma, and that the baby at one point died. But there's nothing that the court could
describe his conduct.
Nothing described. And the
this is the colloquy you've attached at page 29.
That's correct,
of your
Your Honor.
Appendix.
That's correct, Your Honor. The district court also noted that the district court in our case also noted that there were little facts that it had to go on that would help it in determining what Mr. Woods' actions were.
But so from this plea colloquy in the state court, you find out that Mr. Woods was taking care of the victim between March 13 and March 18, the age of the victim, that Mr. Woods calls 911, that's on page 34 or page 6, and then that the child was in his sole care and custody. But it doesn't tell us about shaking, it doesn't tell us about accident versus
intentional
versus reckless.
Right. It doesn't indicate anything that any action Mr. Woods engaged in that would lead a court to find that he created a substantial risk of injury to another.
So he could have left the child on the edge of a bed and gone out to answer the phone, and the child could have fallen.
That's absolutely correct, Your Honor. And we feel strongly that Smith is the appropriate case to apply and that the categorical approach is the one that this court should take, and that because involuntary manslaughter has a mens rea of recklessness, that an analysis of the plea colloquy or a charging document, which we don't have in this case, is not necessary at this point. Involuntary manslaughter is not burglary, arson, does not involve the use of explosives or is extortion. And after our Begay opinion, it no longer meets this residual clause, and that there's an additional layer to the analysis, and that a finding that a crime creates a substantial risk of injury to another is a necessary but not sufficient criteria to establish that it's a crime of violence. Now it has to relate to these enumerated offenses and being purposeful, violent, and aggressive. And the opinions that this court has decided, in Jennings and Smith, of course, and there are others in an immigration context, we have Jimenez-Gonzalez, they show that crimes with the mens rea of recklessness are not the type of purposeful, violent, and aggressive crimes that Congress
what
intended.
What kind of bizarre result is that, where manslaughter is not a crime of violence, but burglary is?
Yeah, I understand your concern, Your Honor.
It makes no sense.
I believe it does, though. It involves reckless conduct, and so...
That doesn't matter.
It does, Your Honor, in that it's unfortunate that in an involuntary manslaughter case a person dies, but the action that's engaged in is not intentional or knowingly that would rise to the level of murder. It's a reckless act that's committed with a lower level of mens rea that would indicate that this isn't the type of person that would go out and would be a repeat violent offender. So we do have a case where, you know, unfortunately a child died, but the actions engaged in, which we don't know by looking at the statute, the actions engaged in committing a reckless act that causes death does not indicate that the person or the defendant is one that would be a repeat violent offender subject to an enhanced
penalty. Actually, many manslaughter convictions and their equivalent under Wisconsin and Indiana law for reckless homicide, first or second degree, are plea bargains.
Yes, Judge.
From intentional conduct.
Yes, Your Honor. We don't have the luxury of addressing what the initial charge was.
But you were making a point about the typical manslaughter offender, and I just don't know that we can generalize in the way that you're suggesting, and that's the whole problem with this rationale of Begay in the first place. And
I understand,
that's
Your
a
Honor,
quarrel with Begay, but...
I should clarify that I'm speaking to involuntary manslaughter convictions.
But my point is that many involuntary manslaughter convictions, like
reduced.
Their equivalent under Wisconsin and Indiana law for second-degree reckless homicide are reduced offenses from cases that were charged as either first-degree or intentional crimes, just like their equivalent in the reckless injury section of the code and the reckless endangerment section of the code.
Maybe in the future the prosecutors won't be willing to bargain them down given these consequences.
That's the problem. All of these have been plea bargains.
And I understand the concern, Your Honor, but I don't believe that the case law before us is... requires us to take an even more advanced look and see what the original charge was.
What's the difference between voluntary and involuntary manslaughter under Illinois law? What's the aggravator that makes it voluntary?
Your Honor, I believe Illinois law has...
I'm putting you on the spot because that's not what this is, but...
No, I understand, Your Honor, but...
You don't know what the different element is?
I believe Illinois has... first-degree murder, second-degree murder, and voluntary manslaughter.
There is no voluntary manslaughter?
I may be misspeaking, Your Honor, but I'm not sure what the aggregator is. There. Your Honors, in any event, Smith is good law. It argues that reckless conduct, negligent conduct, is not to be included as predicate offenses for the career offender guideline. And that matches well with the Jennings opinion as well, that looks at intentional conduct and knowing conduct. If there are no more questions, Your Honor, I would reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Goldberg.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Joe Peterson, and I represent the United States. It's our position that the District Court correctly concluded that the defendant's Illinois conviction for involuntary manslaughter was a crime of violence and correctly determined that the defendant, therefore, was a career offender. It's the United States' position that involuntary manslaughter involuntary manslaughter under Illinois law is categorically a crime of violence under the otherwise clause.
The government argues repeatedly that the fact that Mr. Woods agreed to plead guilty to the crime and that there are facts that indicate a traumatic head injury while the defendant was in control of the baby is enough to show the kind of purposeful, aggressive, and violent behavior that Begay called for. But as the hypothetical I just suggested illustrates, you're making a lot of assumptions. There could easily be a traumatic head injury while somebody is responsible for a baby, and the person could maybe not even be in the room. I don't know whether that's what happened here. I mean, that's I'm putting that to one side because, for all I know, Mr. Woods violently shook this baby, but we have no facts in the record, and I'm very disturbed at it, or I just don't see from the fact that there's a head injury and he's in control of the baby for 5 days that we know that he did anything other than perhaps fail to pay attention to it when he should have.
Well, to answer your question, Your Honor, that would be addressing then the modified categorical approach, I guess, whether or not
and I'm
looking
giving
at
you
the facts.
Benefit of the doubt in a way, I mean, because at one layer we could follow Smith and say if the word reckless is in there or involuntary, it's automatically not something that can be used under 4B1.2. So next level, moving the direction the government would like us to go in, would be to look at the plea colloquy and see what exactly did Mr. Woods admit to. And he doesn't admit to taking any action with respect to the baby that hurt it. So then only at the next level, where if we really, in a sense, had a mini-trial of the case, would we be able to find out if he personally did something.
Which you're not allowed to do under Shepard.
Which we can't do. That's right.
Right.
And so I'm trying to find out what does the government want us to do and what are the inferences?
Okay. Well, first, and I'll get back to this point. First, the court looks at whether or not the offense typically involves purposeful, violent, and aggressive conduct, and it's our position that it does. But if the court doesn't agree that all involuntary manslaughter convictions typically involve violent, aggressive, and purposeful conduct, then looking at the facts of this specific case, what did the defendant admit? He admitted that he committed the offense of involuntary manslaughter, which by statute requires that he consciously disregarded a risk that his acts would cause the death of another,
Judge Wood gave a hypothetical which didn't involve leaving the baby on the side of the bed and leaving the room. I have to say, and obviously this prosecutor was not looking for what might occur later on, but there's no facts admitted or suggested in this plea colloquy that comes to the kind of shaken baby syndrome that it looked like this case may have been about.
You're correct, Your Honor. The plea colloquy, I guess, arguably could indicate that the defendant only left the baby in the room, but I would argue that would only be
so,
negligent
counsel.
Conduct.
That would be
my argument would be that it would be negligent.
The statute requires that he killed the baby.
Correct.
That's how the statute
right.
reads.
It says unintentionally killed.
So he could not have been convicted if he had not done an act which killed the baby.
Right.
Otherwise,
which
the only thing that
causes the death of the baby, which could be leaving the baby in a dangerous place.
No, it's a person who unintentionally kills an individual. So I think that's more than child neglect causing death.
And I agree. And further, the other part of the plea colloquy that the defendant didn't dispute was that the manner of death was homicide, and that also goes to whether or not it was negligent
but
or simply
homicide but that's a circular argument. Homicide includes involuntary manslaughter, so it's just we're right back where we started from with that.
Well, consciously disregarding a substantial and unjustifiable risk in that and the facts indicate that the victim suffered blunt head trauma, which by inference would require some use of force by the defendant. That's our argument. But under the first layer of analysis, as I indicated, the court doesn't even need to get to the specific facts of this case if it finds that involuntary manslaughter offenses typically involve purposeful, violent, and aggressive conduct.
But the statute says that it's an unintentional killing.
But then the statute also says...
Well, the killing is unintentional, but the acts are purposeful.
Right. What the statute goes on to do is define that. You unintentionally kill someone if your acts, whether lawful or unlawful, which cause death, are such as are likely to cause death or great bodily harm. So the statute goes on to define what it's talking about.
Correct. And the Illinois Supreme Court has addressed how an individual can act recklessly, and they indicated that an individual may act recklessly where he commits deliberate acts but disregards the risks of his conduct. And that was in People versus DiVincenzo, 700 Northeast 2nd, 981, in 1998. And in that case, the court was addressing whether or not the defendant was entitled to an involuntary manslaughter conviction in a case where it was a individual who got in physical altercation without weapons against another individual, and the judge refused to give the involuntary manslaughter conviction, and he was convicted of first-degree murder. And the court basically was looking at, under Illinois law, in first-degree murder cases, you have to commit acts knowing that your acts create a strong probability of death or great bodily harm. And they said for involuntary manslaughter, that requires that the individual be aware that his conduct is likely to result in death, although the result is not substantially certain to occur. So it's slightly less likely than the strong probability of death or great bodily harm that would constitute first-degree murder. But they're both, we would argue, under Begay, purposeful acts. And the examples that are given in 4B 1.2.
They're purposeful acts, even though the statute requires them to be unintentional.
Well, the result is unintentional. The killing is unintentional, but the acts that resulted in the killing were intentional, and
no,
they were committed
like
knowing that
death
was.
Act.
I'm sorry.
Just like getting in the car was an intentional act. We can pull this apart so that the gay itself doesn't even exist.
Well,
intentional,
I mean,
as in volitional, which is not the legal definition.
Well, I think if you look at the examples of the arsonist who sets a fire with the intent to damage a building, or the burglar who enters a building with the intent to steal, those are found as under Begay as being
right.
purposeful acts because they had, you know.
Right.
But and actually under Begay they draw a distinction between intentional or purposeful, and right after purposeful they put in parentheses, you know, arson and burglary. So with those individuals, the arsonist who sets the fire is reckless as to the consequences of his acts, that someone may be in the building that he's not aware of and are injured. And actually, arson can be a basis for a person to be charged under Illinois law for involuntary manslaughter if they kill someone that's inside the building.
And we wouldn't be here if the person had been convicted of arson with consequences of killing.
But both of those examples are individuals who acted purposefully as to one aspect of the offense, in intentionally setting the fire and intentionally entering the building with the intent to steal, but acted recklessly, consciously disregarding the risk that physical injury to another would occur.
But do you think that there are any acts that are reckless as opposed to recklessness with respect to the consequence of an act? Give me an example of a reckless act. Or is it really just all consequences in your view?
Well, a reckless act by definition is acting with a conscious disregard of
Correct.
A substantial and unjustifiable risk.
Give me an example of something that you think would be a reckless act.
Firing a gun into a house that has the light on, but you don't know if anybody's inside. That's a reckless act because there's...
Why isn't that recklessness with respect to the consequences of your firing the gun?
It is. I agree.
You're basically arguing for a definition of a purposeful crime for purposes of Begay. I shouldn't have mixed that, but that's what the case
requires that all crimes of recklessness are included, because every crime of recklessness presupposes a volitional act in disregard of the consequences.
All reckless acts are purposeful. They may not meet the other layer of analysis in Begay that they're violent and aggressive. But if you consciously disregard a risk and then act anyway, knowing that the result would occur, you're acting purposefully. That's our position.
Thank you, counsel. How much time is Mr. O'Brien? You have 1 minute, Mr. O'Brien.
Thank you, Your Honors. Your Honor, to answer your question, there is no voluntary manslaughter. It's second-degree murder, and the aggravator is intent.
Okay.
And what we have here is the definition of involuntary manslaughter calls for the requirement that you unintentionally cause the death of another. And so that would be along the lines of the example that Judge Wood gave, in that you can do something that's not purposeful or intent or violent and still cause the death of another, and that would be involuntary manslaughter, and it wouldn't rise to the level of a purposeful or intentional killing that would be first or second degree murder. And the intent that we're looking for is the intent to kill, not the intent to get in a car and drive or the intent to fire off a gun, but the intent to kill is intent, the mens rea that should be focused on. And in this case, if I may briefly conclude.
Briefly.
Mr. Woods received a sentence of 192 months. He should have received 84 to 105, and we respectfully request that the case be remanded.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.